I think that the first thing that I would do is separate out what I think are traits that can be developed and traits that are more inherent. So the trait that I see that's very inherent, but I haven't seen good luck in folks developing, is kind of this deep internal drive. I think that people seem to have that drive, or they seem not to have that drive. And so if you're somebody who has that drive, I think that's a great place to start. You're somebody who's internally motivated. And I think also you're very, if you can be internally motivated and also be very, have an internal reference point. And what I mean by that is that you're somebody who, despite what the world may say or what the world may kind of guide you toward, you're somebody who kind of references yourself in knowing your own capacity, knowing you're the person who may be at work and looks around and says, you know, I have more in the tank than this. I have more that I could be offering, more I could be doing. And you kind of feel that internally, despite what everybody else is telling you, you know, hey, you're on this great track. Hey, you know, if you just hang in there, you're going to be at, you know, the next level of compensation, but you feel like, oh, I feel very constrained. I feel like I have more to offer. The people, I think common traits, they like to solve hard problems. I notice that there's an internal belief that they can figure things out. I think that's a set point. They enjoy taking on these kind of hard problems, and they like making big moves. They're always kind of one foot in the next big move. And I think there's an enjoyment of risk that it isn't as scary as it is like a fascinating problem to solve. They don't see a lot of downside. And when they do, obviously, you know, you protect against that downside. But I do feel as though the traits of kind of having this internal reference point, this internal drive, this belief they can figure it out. I think they do the work on the back end for that belief of being able to figure it out. They're people who will be autodidactic, meaning that they will teach themselves things they need to know. And so they've proven themselves out through these. And if you're somebody who's just starting out and you need to develop this further, I think what you start to do is you start to take these elements that you don't understand. Let's say you want to start a business, or you're at a point where you're in a business and you don't understand certain elements of the next moves. You start kind of learning about those things and taking chances on small areas, you know, just small areas. And once you prove yourself out on these kind of small areas, it gives you more confidence to take larger, you know, make larger bets on yourself. And so it begins to kind of prove to yourself that you have the capacity to kind of edge into these areas that in the past, maybe you didn't feel you had the capacity to. And it opens up your world to be able to see more opportunity. I always say that if you really want to see what opportunity looks like, you have to go through the first door. When you open doors, you see a bunch of other doors, right? I mean, I love that about opportunity. You can't foresee it when you're just sitting at your desk at home. You have to be able to make some moves, whether even that when those are moves are online, you make those moves and then you see, oh, wow, now that I've seen this happen, I see five other things that are possibilities. And then you go and you choose one of those doors and then you see other possibilities. But you have to be willing to open the first door to see the others. And so I encourage people to, you know, open some small doors, take risks, you know, take bets on yourself, learn the things you need to learn, and bet on yourself. And when you start to do that, you start to grow in capacity, and you also grow in your bias to action. Because hesitancy, to me, one of the primary challenges I see is that people who are hesitant see themselves hesitating, and it degrades their sense of, you know, sense of self, sense of confidence, while they watch other people take the same risks and win. And you don't want to kind of be in that position where you're hesitating, and you're watching other people move forward. Then you begin to believe maybe they have something I don't. And that's rarely the case, honestly.
Let me double click on that for a second. Where do you think the capacity for reinvention plays into that sort of trait you're talking about? Because, of course, when you take these risks and that appetite sort of grows over time, there's often a greater appetite to take slightly larger risk, and then it becomes a little bit more reputational. And in some cases, particularly in entrepreneurship, you know, you can imagine that people have had a good run or not a great run. They sort of take some time out and they come back with a very different lens on the world, and they might have a different industry focus or a different approach to how they want to approach life. Does reinvention play a significant role in how you see successful people evolve over time?
Reinvention is such a fantastic question because I think that it requires a lot of people to begin to evaluate themselves honestly. We know that, for example, and, you know, implement that throughout their careers or companies. We know that in early stage startups, you know, I think it's something, don't quote me on this, but it's like 40% will end up changing their model of, you know, their revenue model. They'll end up, they have to make these shifts. You have to reinvent, and some will take a different direction entirely. So when you talk about reinvention, I think that what it takes internally for somebody to do that is really someone who feels a sense of security around, you know, who they are and what they need to do, and will take the chances they need to take to make the business successful. It's not, there's a detachment, I think, in reinvention, that is very hard for people to be a part of. And when I say a detachment, I mean that if you are your business, maybe it's a very controversial thing in some ways, but if you are your business, you can't let go enough and have the distance that it takes to be able to change that business to meet the needs of your, you know, kind of the goals and outcomes that you have. With a little bit of detachment and realizing, you know, you're, as I say in that newsletter, you're the driver, not the car. When you start to think about that kind of distance, you can change the cars that you drive. You can change the motors in those cars. And you just feel like, look, the more that I can evolve this thing, the more I can get where I really want to go. And if you don't have that distance and you're too attached to what the business is, or maybe what your persona is, or all of those things involve that kind of firm attachment, then you kind of limit yourself in where you're able to go. So I do think, like, if you look at, you know, all the great people and all the great businesses, you'll see from Amazon selling books to, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, even as an individual and within his own business, they require reinvention. And as a CEO or leader of a business, you will have to reinvent yourself all the time to keep up with the demands of the market and to keep up with the demands of, you know, like your career and goals and, you know, the long-term play that any big business would require. So I'm a big fan of reinvention, but I think it takes a certain type of internal fortitude to be able to pull it off.
Yeah, it's interesting. The reason I ask is because, you know, my career started in the military, and I know that many people who start their careers in the military end up with a very close connection between identity and their role.
Sure.
And when they depart the military, that becomes problematic often because it's, well, I've lost that anchor point. And, you know, when I moved into entrepreneurship, you know, five companies in, I think that detachment you talk of became a healthier and more visible, I guess, disconnection over time. It wasn't something that I did very well in the beginning, but maybe at company three or four, I started to realize that was a really important quality to sort of maintain. And it made reinvention a lot more straightforward as well.
So tell me about, I mean, if you don't mind me asking, tell me about what made that click for you.
I think I realized how blind I was becoming and how poor my decision-making quality ultimately became, because it was less about the company, more about, well, what will happen if I am no longer connected to the company and the identity I've built over so much time? And you know, fundamentally, I think for entrepreneurs, sometimes they spend a lot of time in that mindset because they've got to be the company, they've got to do all the selling, do all the pushing. But when it comes to the point where maybe everything you're trying is not working, that's when a point of very sort of naked self-reflection has to take effect, so that you can go, well, actually change has to happen. What does that mean? And hopefully it's happening well before the company ends up hitting a wall. Yeah. So I guess that's kind of where I found that to be pretty useful.
No, thank you for sharing that. I hope that your listeners heard that, because that's a really important point for people to ingest and understand. So anyway, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. So when we think about the cycle, and I guess the psychology of starting anything, whether it be something very large and ambitious, or even, you know, something small, which feels big to a person when they've never really stepped out for themselves. When we think about the ability of a leader to inspire and motivate their team, you know, many young entrepreneurs, many people who've come out of the military again, or a government kind of role, have never often had to stand in front of people outside of a rank structure, outside of a sort of an organization that is used to seeing people progress. What is the mental models that people can be using to think about how they can inspire and motivate teams when they're just maybe trying to figure it out for themselves as well?
You know, when you're trying to figure it out for yourself as well, I think you have to start there first. I think it's very hard to inspire and motivate a team when you aren't certain who you are and you aren't certain, you know, what you stand for and how you feel about things. Because then if you're trying to inspire and motivate a team when you're uncertain, then there's a bit of a, this is where I think people start to develop like an imposter syndrome, what we call type of thing, right, where, you know, you're standing in front of others, you don't feel certain, but you know you have to project certainty, so it begins to feel fake. And then that falseness begins to kind of ring in you and make you feel unsteady, and it creates this whole pattern that I think is very unhealthy and also doesn't move the business ahead. So I would say that, you know, you start with yourself first and developing a little bit of that certainty in what you want to do, how you want to approach things, and get to a place where, and this is why I think a lot of times you see venture capitalists and others, one of the things they look for is conviction, you know, that certainty, because that conviction doesn't just, you know, inspire teams, it inspires venture capitalists to hand over millions of dollars, right? I mean, right, that conviction is infectious. So I do think that you have to get to a point where you understand, if you came from the military, for example, often what I've found in those who come from those environments is that they've had tremendous responsibility. They've been in charge of things that are objectively far more important than a company. And they've, you know, had people's, have had responsibility that objectively is, you know, far outpaces what they'll be asked to do in a business around, you know, people's safety or lives or resource allocation, sometimes at greater scales than the companies that they're starting. So I do think that you have to dig into who you actually are first and understand that person, and then use that person to kind of push whatever your belief is in this next thing forward. And with your conviction, with your certainty, with you kind of seeing the path and then laying out that path clearly, whether it's to your teams, to raising capital, I think that there's a lot of power in that. I think from that point, teams love to see leaders pulling off wins, and I think that that inspires and motivates them. So you go out and you raise that funding, or you go out and you, you know, have this vision, and they, the team sees, hey, you know, you just got, I don't know, $1.5 or $2 million pre-seed round. That feels like, wow, you know, somebody is betting on this founder. Somebody is betting on our leader. We're going to go places. From there, I think one of the things that I've seen in larger operators that want to inspire and motivate their teams, if they're not in that small place, maybe they're medium or larger sized, and this is kind of a fun one that I really like to see happen, is that they see their leader as somewhat of a magician, that this is a person who can pull it off, whether it's pulling off the partnership, as you know, or it's pulling off a certain feature in the market and getting it out quickly, or it's being absolutely right about something that no one else believed in. When you see someone leading you who seems to be magical in their ability to either get things done, see the future, you know, get, move the world in some way, that is inspiring. And it keeps people wanting to take that ride with you, despite the fact that maybe they're not paid as much as a competitor is just offered. They see the value in kind of standing by your side.
You know, it's such a fascinating topic around that magician sort of concept. I've felt that many times where, you know, you sweat the details and you are forever thinking about every permutation, every option that you're trying to, you look around corners, you know, it detracts from sleep and attention on other things, which are probably more important, to be fair. But you end up in a circumstance where a deal comes off, and in our case, you know, big partnership deals come off, and people just have been blind to the fact that it has taken a year to get this deal across the line. But the celebration of a signing of now we can get started, it looks like it took 5 minutes. And I think that's the, I always have spent a lot of time with my teams explaining to them the steps and keeping them updated on where we are in certain projects to help that sort of be communicated, even though they have in the past. I've had somebody say to me, I don't know how you do that. And my little secret is I'm not sure I know how to do it either. It just happens that we keep on showing up and trying to make it work. And sometimes you have a good day.
Well, you also have a benefit of being somebody who's pulled it off in the past. And I think that has its own lore to it, that people are excited to be, you know, partnered with someone who they know has a history of pulling off these magic tricks. And, you know, it's the same reason why you would see a well-known founder who is starting company number two and people are throwing money at them, because, you know, there's already this sense that they know how to pull off a little bit of magic, and we want to be a part of that too. We believe in that magic. So, and it could be a completely different industry. So it's a fascinating concept, and I'm glad you've seen that with your team as well.